Please listen carefully.
All right, so, I don't know, let's talk. Catch up. What have you been up to?
I've just been traveling a lot and raising money and spreading awareness, doing talks over here and there and stuff, so it's good.
Where is the craziest place you've traveled to?
I went to France twice this year, and then I went to Italy. But the craziest place that I thought was, like, the coolest was a few years ago, actually. I went to Nova Scotia to a fundraiser up there, and the family that I visited was actually a First Nations family, and they had, like, this Indian sweat lodge down by the lake, and it was crazy, man. It was so, like, they invited me, and I was so honored to be able to partake. But you get, it, like, we roll up, and there's, like, a fire going.
Right.
And there's these hot stones in the, they built the fire around these stones.
Right.
And, like, we get there, and they break the fire down and shovel the stones into, like, this little tiny hut. It's basically like an oven.
You're basically right? Sitting in an oven.
And then we get in there. It's like 400 degrees. I don't know how hot it was in there. But so it's this whole ceremony. Anyway, it was really touching and emotional and to be there. Well, anyway, that's a random story. Where have you start with where have you been and now I'm, yeah, but... So that was really cool to experience that.
So it's a ceremony. So you're in there, and are they like saying like chants or like?
Yeah, no. So you go in there. There's like 10 guys, and we're all like hunched over, because it's this tiny little like oven that you have to like crawl into.
Right.
And it's like this hut that's made out of bent branches with like. Really heavy blankets over the top of it. And then so you get in and it's so hot that like if you have any exposed skin, it literally cooks.
Okay, so
there's like you have like towels over your shoulders and one over your legs too. And like if like the towel shifts or something and there's any exposed skin, like you can immediately feel it because it starts burning.
Oh my God.
And you have to breathe only through your nose because it's too hot for your lungs and like, yeah, it's so crazy. And, but they did like there's a prayer round where everyone like goes around, like says a prayer and there's like a Thanksgiving round. Where everyone gives around, like, says what they're thankful for. There was a singing round where they had this certain song. And then there was one more, and I forget what it was. But it was really cool, because, like, the prayer, like, I like, understand what prayer is more now. Because it was only men. It was all the older men, like, the leaders of their community, like, communicating to each other through prayer.
Right.
Like, they would say, like, they would pray for, like, their grandmother or something. She's going through a tough time. But basically what that was saying is to you, like, hey, my mom or my grandmother's going through a tough time. Like, I want your support, basically. You know? And, like, so it was just neat to, like, see that dynamic and, like, be a part of it. So.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And you were there to speak in the first place?
Yeah, they had a fundraiser. Their community came together. They had, like, this gala with, like, a silent auction. And
gotcha.
I spoke on stage, and they raised, like, $10,000.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really cool. So.
When you started working, were you always a natural public speaker?
I always liked it. I always liked being in front of the crowd, and I always saw it as an advantage because no one wants to do it. Nobody wants to be in front of the crowd, you know? And so I'm like, all right, this gives me one up on everyone, right?
Yeah.
If I can be good at this,
right?
Or shoot, I feel like sometimes you don't even have to be good. You don't even have to be good. You just have to make it look like you're good at it, or yeah. Like that you're confident.
Yeah,
you know, and like
it's not what you say; it's how you say it.
Yeah, kind of. And the one main thing I know about public speaking is that if I screw up, I'm the only one that knows. And so if my audience doesn't see that, then, like, it doesn't matter, right? And so that's one of the things that makes me confident up there is that if I screw up, it's only me. And also, like, every single time I talk, there's something. Like 10 minutes after my speech, I'll be like, shoot, I didn't say this or that or whatever. And I just realized that happens every time. And there's always the next opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so each time, I just try to move the ball forward. I mean, I don't try and score a touchdown every time. Just try and get some information out there. What I've learned is it doesn't matter how... It doesn't matter if they remember what you said. Mm-hmm. As long as they remember how you made them feel.
Got it. And that's so, a Maya Angelou quote.
Right? Is it?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. You didn't know that?
I think I've looked it up before.
It must have come across your
mind. Yeah, it must have. It must have been implanted in my mind.
Or you are secretly a reincarnation
channeling
of Maya Angelou.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she has a quote. It's like, people will forget what you say. People will forget what you did, but they will always remember how you make them feel.
There you go. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, that's my philosophy on public speaking. Well, my borrowed philosophy on public speaking.
Apparently. Yeah. But you thought it was yours. Look, I'm just making sure that we don't have any, like, trademark or copyright, infringement here.
Yeah.
So when you go into a speech, you have a loose sense of what you want to talk about, but you don't have it scripted out.
You know what, I'm way better scripted. Like, I have one speech. If anyone wants to see it, they just look for my TED Talk online.
Right.
And I've given that speech like 100 times. And most of my talks are some version of that talk. Like,
gotcha.
And there's, you know, I'll add things to, like, tailor it to the audience to, like, make it more personal for them.
Sure.
But, you know, like, that's my story.
Right.
And everything starts from there, you know?
Gotcha. So if someone was looking for you online or the TED Talk, what should they type in?
They just type in my name and TED. It was at TEDx Phoenixville. So,
So since we didn't really officially introduce you, so what is your name and how would you introduce yourself to someone who doesn't know you?
So, my name's Kyle Bryant and, I am the, Ride Ataxia, director at the Friedreich's Ataxia Research Alliance. I have a disease called Friedreich's Ataxia and it's, neuromuscular disease that affects all balance and coordination. It also has side effects such as speech difficulties, hearing, vision, scoliosis, diabetes, and life-threatening heart complications. There is no treatment or cure. And as a member of the FA community and on staff at FARA, you know, that's what we're working to change. We're working to find a cure for FA. And, you know, really, like, for me personally, you know, I think I'm just trying to do something big with my life. And, I mean, aren't we all, I guess, right? and something important. Some people, right?
Are. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, obviously, to me, this a cure for a fae is front and center. It's the biggest thing. My dream, I think, is to is that as a community, we find a cure. And you know what? You're part of the FA community, Chris. And my dream is to find a cure and then do something else. You know,
move on.
I'm not sure
bigger and better.
Yeah. So
let's just find the cure and then you can move on to.
And not to say that it's a small thing. Because, oh, we can just do that and then move on. But, no. you know what I mean.
Of course not.
Yeah.
So, when you do meet someone new, do you, because you must know that if you meet someone that they're going to wonder, like, why you're in a wheelchair or, like, they're going to have questions in their head that they may or may not think are appropriate to ask. So do you just come out and say, hey, I'm Kyle. Oh, and I have Friedrich's ataxia.
No, you're like if I'm at like randomly, I kind of try not to make that the first thing people know about me. I mean, mm-hmm. And it's sometimes it's a little hard to not, because the first thing people notice is the wheelchair.
Right.
Obvious, you know, right. It's the biggest difference between me and most of the people. Like when I come to the gym, everybody's standing around.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not. And so sometimes I find it easier just to get that out of the way. Like, here, this is what it is, mm-hmm. and now let's move on. Let's do a workout. Let's connect on a deeper level than that, you know?
Right.
And, but, so, you know, I try to not make it the first thing people know, but sometimes it's easier just to get out of the way.
Got it. Case-by-case scenario.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's the biggest focus of my life is, you know, raising money and raising awareness and, you know, representing the FA community and the community of people with disabilities. And so, you know, I feel an obligation to, like, represent that as well.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, because unlike a lot of folks with FA, your job is directly tied to your condition, right? Like your career, right?
Oh, yeah, big time, yeah. And, I mean, I'm grateful for that because it's the most meaningful thing that I could do with my time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I worked as an engineer. I got a degree in civil engineering. I worked as a project engineer out of college for like 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a cubicle every day and like it was, didn't feel meaningful, you know? And now I get to like, you know, I get to ride my trike and like write blogs and, you know, hang out with people for a living and like try to live a life that, is an example of, like, reaching farther to, like, something bigger.
Right.
And, like, how awesome is that? I feel so grateful that I get to do that. Like, that's what my job is almost, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Talk about your upbringing. So you were an engineer, but even before that, like, where did you grow up? What kind of kid were you? Like, you know, what's the background story?
You know, my family was always really active and camping and hiking and mountain biking and, you know, fishing and hunting and all that stuff. And so, you know, a lot of that stuff dominated my childhood and my upbringing. And, you know, we were always going to, like, soccer practice, baseball, football, or not football as much, but basketball, whatever. But, so, you know, just a really active childhood and always had really great friends, good community, grew up in a suburb in California. I mean, I would almost, it was like on the edge of rural, you know, in Northern California in the foothills, and loved it. You know, we had a ski boat. We went, you know, skiing. My parents lived near this little lake up in the foothills, and so, you know, I have a brother, older brother, 2 years older. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's an amazing guy. My sister-in-law is amazing. I got a niece and nephew. And so, just, fun. Yeah.
Good. What about you? Like, did you, you grew up playing all these sports. And then, was it baseball that you were kind of focused on?
Yeah, good memory. I in baseball, my throws were going off target. I was unable to run down a fly ball in the outfield, and that's kind of how we started noticing FA.
Got it.
I think that if I wasn't involved in sports, if I wasn't demanding that kind of those skills and ability from my body, then we might not have known about FA for a few more years, you know.
Got it. Interesting. Well, because baseball has it requires such precision.
Exactly.
Right. That's interesting. So you caught it. When were you diagnosed?
I was diagnosed at age 17. It took a year to get a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then when we were diagnosed, I say we because really, it's my whole family. When somebody with FA is diagnosed, it doesn't just affect them. It affects the whole family, the whole community, you know, everyone around them. So, you know, when we were diagnosed, we looked back. And, I mean, as far as, like, when I was real small, my mom said she couldn't let me go outside without shoes on because I would inevitably stub my toe, you know, and we're like, oh, maybe, like, I really do think that was FA, part of it anyway. Yeah. I mean, part of it is just being a little kid, but,
right.
So, you know, and like, whatever, when I'm 10, like, I'm having trouble carrying a glass of water in the living room, you know. I never was the most skilled or coordinated person on the sports field or whatever. In high school, I loved to golf, and I'm sorry, but I had a good swing, man. My swing was, I love it, and I can still feel how it feels to, like, make a good swing. It's just my body just won't do it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those are some things that you got to kind of cope with. And, you know, everyone's life changes, right? I mean, everyone goes through that. And you have this vision in your head of the life that you hope. And at some point, everyone goes through it. At some point, that vision is not how it plays out. Mm-hmm. And that's part of life, right? And so partly I don't see that I am experiencing, like, partly I feel like I'm experiencing a similar thing to everyone, just in a different way, and maybe more or less. Yeah, I hate comparing, you know, whether somebody's suffering more or less than somebody else, that I don't think that's worth it to even. But, so I kind of try and keep it in perspective, like, everyone at some point is going through a similar thing, you know, like this or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
you know? I mean, the loss of a family member or, you know, an illness or whatever it is, I think there's a lot of tough situations that everyone goes through.
So you have a podcast with a friend of yours, and it's called Two Disabled Dudes, right?
And yeah. So we've got 20, our 26th episode will be out, and So I don't know when you when you public when is this going to be published?
I have no idea. Maybe next week.
Nice.
Yeah, probably next week.
Yeah, so our 26th episode is out right now. The Two Disabled Dudes podcast. I recorded with a friend of mine. He lives in California.
Right.
You know, I live out here in Pennsylvania. And so we publish once every 2 weeks.
Got it.
And we talk to different people a lot.
Yeah, obviously. So it's coming up on a year.
Yeah. So awesome. I think we started December 12th was our first episode. So
cool.
We talk to different people in the disability community. Like we talked to this guy who's a Paralympic gold medalist in swimming.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to a guy who is he's missing a leg. He has a disease that he was born with that didn't allow his limbs to fully develop. But he was like an amazing Division I athlete, tennis player, mm-hmm. who competed against like all able-bodied and like kicked butt, you know. And now he's a professional speaker, you know. And we've interviewed a lot of people in the rare disease community.
Yeah,
I mean that just because that's where we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's who we know and what's important to us. But you know, we're still honing in on our voice and you know, branching out a little bit and trying to find, you know, our niche and stuff. But we have a lot of fun doing it, and we just kind of make fun of each other. And
yeah, you guys are so funny. It's like I'll be listening to you guys either in the car or like in a coffee shop, and like I will laugh out loud. And it's really awkward if I'm in public.
Yeah, everybody's like, "What's up with that guy?"
But you guys are just—I don't know if it's like—I don't know if it's like dry humor or it's hard to put my finger on like why you guys are so funny. But it's like,
yeah, no, I don't think it's dry. It's just like Sean just says really weird stuff all the time. Yeah, and like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. So he's just it's. Well, okay, so the reason I even bring it up is because I think one of your first episodes, you guys were talking about just this idea of, like, being positive or like, you know, because I think anybody could agree that, like, you would have every reason to be, like, pissed or, you know, angry about your situation or whatever the case may be. So, like, do you feel like growing up or, like, as a person, like, you were always this positive or, you know, optimistic? Or is it that the condition, that having FA, you know, made you appreciate the little things? Like, how did this...
I think my mom never had any patience or tolerance for being negative or down on yourself.
For feeling bad for yourself.
Yeah, like she kind of didn't take much crap from me and my brother. And so, you know, there was a little bit of tough love, just like, get over it, like... Let's go move on to the next thing. Stop being so down on yourself. Kind of feeling. I don't know that like she ever put words behind it. Maybe she did, but you know, I think that's just kind of her philosophy. And you know, I feel like that has really formed a lot of my views on my situation, because I'm like, all right, I can't do this, I can't do that, but here's this whole world of different things that I might not have thought of before, might not have envisioned, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's this other direction we can go, and it's just as amazing. You know what? Maybe even more amazing than the vision, because, right, we're so confined by our thoughts. And sometimes our thoughts can narrow our vision. But maybe when something happens in our life that forces us to think differently,
right,
then it opens up our mind way more, right?
Right.
And so I think that, you know, zero tolerance for feeling down and feeling sorry for yourself was a big part of, you know, my philosophy.
That's cool. Can you tell the story of, I forget where you were, but the taxi driver? Because, look, I want you to tell the story, because anyone else in that situation where, and you can tell the story, but like, I would have been livid, and there would have been so many expletives and reasons to be just pissed at the world. Can you tell that story?
Yeah. So I was going to visit friends in Washington D.C., and I took the train down, and get to the train station, and usually I call an Uber,
mm-hmm.
but that day, like, there was a cab, like, just sitting right there, like, basically calling to me, like, waiting for me.
Mm-hmm.
So there's those attendants that, like, help you get in a cab, right?
Right.
So this guy starts helping me get in the cab, and the driver didn't get out. He hardly even, like, acknowledged that I was in this. This other guy, this attendant guy that was helping me in, he's, like, taking my chair apart and, like, mm-hmm. helping me fit it in and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I didn't really think anything. I thought it was kind of weird that the guy didn't really give him the time of day. But anyway, I finally got in the cab, and I'm like, all right, 26 6th Street or something like that. Mm-hmm. 1000 6th Street, I think, was the address. So the guy's like, all right, and he starts driving, and I'm like on Instagram or like Twitter, whatever,
mm-hmm.
during the whole ride, and all of a sudden I'm, you know, I'm looking down, I'm not looking around at all. We're here. He's like, here it is. And I look around, and it's like all these like broken down buildings, like, this is definitely not the place I want to be. And so he's like, we're here. I'm like, no, I don't think that. And in Washington, D.C., there's 6th Street Southwest, 6th Street Northwest.
Right,
like,
right.
You know,
yep,
so
yep.
It definitely was not the right place. And the guy was like, no, this is what you said. And it was clear that I was trying to show him my phone and be like, look, no, this is where I want to be. He wasn't having it.
Right.
And he didn't speak hardly any English.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me thinks that he was pretending a little. Like, come on. Like, I bet he could communicate a little better than he let on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But so he pulls my chair out of the back and, like, sets it on the ground. And, like, at this point, usually people are like, all right, how do I put this together? How can I help you, right?
Yeah, and how I'm can like, I open right. up this chair, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
How can we get you in this chair and on your way? So, that was after I gave up and I was like, all right, this guy does not want to communicate. I'll just get out and, like, find another way to get there. So, anyway, he puts the chair on the ground. And then it was clear that he was not interested in helping at all. So he, like, starts walking around and gets back in, and, like, I'm just like, okay, I'll figure this out. And I just sit down on the ground and close the door, and he takes off. And so I'm sitting there in the middle of Washington, D.C. I'm not where I want to be.
You're in this rundown neighborhood.
Rundown neighborhood.
You're not even in your chair.
Not even on the curb. Like in, like, the parking spot area of the street. My chair is taken apart, so I'm like, all right, I know how to do this. So I put it back together, I get in my chair, and, like, get on the sidewalk. I'm like, all right, center yourself, let's figure this out. So then I just call an Uber, And, you know, it took like 3 minutes. The guy was super nice, helped me with everything. I had a really nice conversation. You know, and he took me to where I needed to go, but it was just, it was a crazy situation. I wish I had taken a selfie or something, because it was just me sitting there on the side of the road. Yeah, it was just really crazy. But, so yeah, that's probably the worst of the worst, that as far as, you know, somebody treating me. But, like I said, like, in those situations, like, I think, so one of the things when you have a disability is, like, it's super awkward for everyone in the situation, but, like, asking for help mm-hmm. is a really hard thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And when somebody offers and you decline help and they get all offended because you decline, like, all this stuff, but part of that is that I never want to be in a situation where I can't get myself out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there's probably those situations out there, but I'd like to think that I can handle anything, right? Right. And so a lot of it is, like, if someone offers help and I'm like, no, I want to try and do this on my own, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a tough situation because they get offended and whatever, but I don't know, maybe... Does that thought even connect? Because,
well, I think disability or not, I think people have a mm-hmm. hard time asking for help.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Right, like that's just human. To me, that's kind of human nature. Like, no, I got this. I can do this.
Yeah. So, like, since I've been like, okay, for example, in CrossFit, like,
yeah.
I do a lot of stuff on the ground, right?
Right.
And I know the movement I need to do to get myself back in my chair.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for because of CrossFit, from doing push-ups and whatever. And, like, I totally use that skill in the Washington, D.C. that was that day, trying to get back in my chair, you know? And so, you know, when I don't ask for help, sometimes it's because I'm trying to develop a skill or, like, prove to myself that I can get out of whatever situation, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want someone to pick me up and put me back in my chair because, you know what, I need to figure out how to do it, you know? Right. So, right. Yeah.
How did you find CrossFit?
So, I actually, my friend with the FA turned me onto it. He was trying to figure out how to find a gym in his area, and then I'm like, wow, I'm going to look at this. And I looked online. I also... At the very same time, I had another friend who does not have FA, but he was doing CrossFit for like 6 months or something, and I saw him online, and like, it was a total body transformation, mm-hmm. and he was just like really happy and positive about it, obviously, you know, and so I was like, whoa, that's crazy, and so, you know, those two things led me to just search online, and I found CrossFit KOP, which is right by where I used to live,
mm-hmm.
And so I went in and went in there. So and yeah. So that night that I went in, we did the baseline WOD.
Yeah,
and that was the WOD we did here today.
That's right. So 500 meter row, 40 air squats, 30 sit-ups, 20 push-ups, yeah. 10 pull-ups. Yeah.
Yeah, and so that day, like I was telling you earlier, my heart rate went up. I mean, probably higher than it's ever been, and it stayed up till like 3 a.m. You couldn't get to sleep. I was like, and
all right, because you probably came in at night, right? You probably
like 7 o'clock right, or something. Like
a later workout, yeah, yeah.
And I heard you talking to somebody earlier today. You're like, some people are like, yeah, bring it on. This is awesome. And some people are like, no, that's way too much for me. But for me, it was like, that's exactly what I wanted. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, like, be, you know, Amy calls it, what, sizzling bacon, I
sizzling think. Bacon. Yeah. When you're on the floor and just, like, sizzling.
Yeah.
So when you started CrossFit. That what year was that? That was 2012.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you at that point working for Farah and riding your bike and all that?
Yeah. So I actually came on staff at Farah in like October of 2009. Mm-hmm. And I worked for a year out of my home in Sacramento. Okay. And then it got to the point where I was like, all right, this isn't as efficient as it could be. And I moved out of here.
Gotcha.
So I was working for Vera for a couple years at that point.
Gotcha. So you had moved out here because then you wanted to be closer to headquarters.
Yeah, exactly. Headquarters. Gotcha. Yeah, there's 8 people now. So
nice.
Yeah.
Big HQ. Yeah.
Exactly.
So have you know, obviously you're traveling a lot, right? You're on the road what every week? Is it every week or
I travel about 100 days a year.
Okay.
And sometimes it's like sometimes I'll go through like this year I had 1 month where I didn't leave home at all, which mm-hmm. is awesome. And then like during September this year,
gotcha,
I was home only like 3 days during the month, so
wow.
It kind of goes in spurts. I actually try to like if I'm going somewhere, I'll try and couple it with like a trip here and there. Mm-hmm. Because I want to get it out of the way so I can get home and
right.
and recharge and whatever. So yeah.
Because you said recharge, this made me think, do you consider yourself an extrovert or an introvert?
Extrovert, 100%. 100%. Yeah, yeah.
Especially in your type of role, I would have to imagine you're an extrovert.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's just the way I'm built. And I think, you know, we're all different. And mm-hmm. it's like that realization. You know, as I've gotten older, because when I was younger, I had no tolerance for anyone that didn't think the way I did, you know what I mean? And so, you know, it's our responsibility to get along with everyone who, you know, introvert, extrovert, whatever it right. is, you know?
Yep. So you did this, bike ride across the country, talk about that. Like, how did that come about? Where did the idea come from? Were you already like physically prepared to do that?
So I started riding a trike in 2007, and I did a cross country ride in 2007 with my dad, and we rode the whole way together. It took us 2 months. We actually didn't ride all the way across the country. It was from San Diego to Memphis, okay. Tennessee.
I would say so, that's pretty much across the country.
So, yeah, 2,500 miles. So, you know, I just love being on my trike. Like, I think probably the greatest feeling to me is powering myself, like realizing that the reason I'm going 20 miles per hour right now is because I want to. And so eventually that, you know, I just always wanted more and more of that, and that's what drove me across country. And so then in 2010, you know, we did a few long distance bike rides. We started building this series of bike rides across the country, single day rides that anyone could get involved in. And then in 2010, I got a team together to do the Race Across America, mm-hmm. which is a 3,000 mile race from Oceanside, California to Annapolis, Maryland. Mm-hmm. And a team has to finish in less than 9 days. So we had to ride 24 hours a day at an average speed of about 14 miles per hour.
An average speed.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, sometimes we're going 4 miles an hour up it, you know, at the Rockies, and sometimes we're going like, you know, 40 downhill, but yeah.
Right.
And then, you know, 16, 17 miles per hour through Kansas and the Flats and over the Mississippi River through Indiana, all of that. So yeah, it was quite an adventure. I don't know. I sometimes see my condition, my disease, my situation, my circumstances as a reason to do something crazy, like an excuse. Like I hate it. Well, I can understand it, but I think it's tough to see somebody that uses FA or any disease or circumstance as an excuse to feel sorry for themselves or to, like you said, like it's totally justified to like lock yourself in your room and never talk to anyone again. Like it's not out of the question in a situation like this, but I would much rather use it as an excuse to like do something a little crazy that you wouldn't do otherwise. And that's like going to be, you know, helpful for a lot of people. I mean, and I had the opportunity to learn over, you know, 3 or 4 years that my role, like riding bikes, isn't just about me. You know, obviously mm-hmm. that's where it started. Like I said, like I just love the feeling of powering myself. But mm-hmm. over time, I realized that it provides hope and positivity for lots of other people, especially in the FA community, but hopefully a little bit beyond that. And so you know, I take that responsibility very seriously, maybe sometimes too seriously. I take myself a little seriously sometimes, which is probably not healthy, but you know, at least recognizing that is good. But anyway, I don't even know where I was going with this.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think we were talking about the bike ride. It gave you an excuse to do something crazy. Go ahead.
Like, but people using it as not using it as an excuse to feel sorry for themselves, but using it as an excuse to do something great with their lives. You know,
which I think again, like disability or not, I guess my question is, why do you need that excuse? Why do you need a disability to do something?
That's a good point.
Not crazy, like in a dangerous sense, but like to push your limits.
Right.
Like you always hear these stories where people have a life threatening event, or like, you know, they a close encounter with death or something like that.
Right.
And then they decide to like change their lives.
Right.
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 Do something good for once in a life. You know, they go through some traumatic event and then all of a sudden they're volunteering at places or like, you know, raising money for this cause or like whatever the case may be.
Right.
But the question is, you know, why does that have to even happen?
Right? That's a good question.
Like, why can't people who, you know, who haven't even gone through that, realize that, hey, maybe this is a good thing to, you know, do things for other people? And
I think it's because we're weak, mm-hmm. and I'm weak. I know I'm pretty confident that if I didn't have a FA, mm-hmm. like, I would be, the focus of my life would be a lot different. Mm. And I guess partly that's fairly obvious, but partly, like, I feel like, unfortunately, I feel like I would be just in that 9-to-5 cubicle job trying to make a buck mm-hmm. and, you know, have a nice house and whatever, you know? And so maybe it's a conscious decision to find the so-called adversity in our lives and do something positive because of that. I mean, like I was saying earlier, like, everyone's got something tough in their lives, and maybe use that as a pivot point to, like, shift and do something positive, I guess. I don't know, but...
And it doesn't even have to be... So one of the... So I, yeah. Like, how you feel about the folks who might, like, just feel bad for themselves or kind of, you know, close themselves off from everything. Whenever I hear people be like, you know, because we'll, you know, I'll talk about, like, either places that we've traveled to or, you know, other stuff like bucket list items, right? Like, I always had wanted to go skydiving, so I went skydiving, right? Or travel to wherever. And then you hear people who are like, oh, I've always wanted to do that. Like, I've always wanted to do this. I've always wanted to do that. Right? So it doesn't have to be, you know, altruistic for everything. But even from, like, let's say a travel standpoint, like, so many people would say, oh, I would love to travel there. Okay.
Yeah.
Go do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what's holding you back?
Right.
Ah, well, money this, or, like, time this. I don't have the time. Like, what, I mean, if you really wanted to do it, like, if you really wanted to, you would make it work.
Totally. I totally agree. You know, with any of these bike rides, it was like, you know, this is the only thing on my mind for, like, years, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, yeah, like, if there's a big trip or whatever that you want to do, you want to lose weight, you know, if that's the only thing on your mind, you're going to figure out a way to do it,
right?
I guess.
Right. To me, it's like the actions speak louder than the words do, right? Or people would be like, well, I'll wait till I retire. Well... I don't think you're going to be able to carry those bags as easily when you're retired as now, like when you're, you know, stronger and younger.
Yeah, I was, you know, my friend was here from France. He stayed for a couple of days. He has the FA also, but he was talking about, yeah, I took a year off and I, you know, went to New Zealand and lived there. And he was talking about, you know, he went to India and did some, like, whatever, this yoga training. I was like, oh, cool, how long were you there? He's like, oh, is there a month? I was like, what? And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, that sounds super awesome. It's, you know, it's not the thing I'm going to be thinking about.
Right.
But... If it is, like, go, do it, right? Like you said. I think the thing that I struggle with, especially right now, having, you know, all these things under my belt, is figuring out what's next. And
yeah, so that's my next question. Do you have an idea of what's next?
I mean, you know, obviously the cure for FA is... the thing, right? But that's like a big thing. Like, how do you break that down, right? And so, you know, as an organization, we have an amazing board of directors and an executive director that really break that down into, all right, what do we do right now, tomorrow, or whatever, to make this happen? So, you know, so I'm pretty confident in that. But as far as me personally, like, I think that's one of the hardest things is to figure out what you want to do, because all of us know that once you figure that out, if you have something to focus on, then, like, it's, you can get it done, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have anything out there, so, you know, I'm constantly trying to fill my plate with the next challenge. So we did a ride in France this year, 450-mile ride in 8 days. I rode my trek to the top of the highest paved road in North America.
Nice. A
couple years ago. You know, race across America. I guess the next big thing is I'm almost finished with a book right now.
Nice.
So, you know, that is probably my next big thing, I think, something to look forward to. You know, on our podcast, we're always trying to get more out of that and stuff, too. So.
Yeah, so what's the timeline on that?
On the book?
Yeah.
Well, if anyone's out there, and if you are a literary agent, I'd love
to... We only have literary agents listen to this. So you're in good hands.
Yeah. I'd love to send you my proposal. I mean, it'll happen next year.
Would you do self-publishing? Because Amazon, I think, has...
I would, but I want to... I really do think it's a unique book that, you know, because it's about... Like, it's structured around my ride in 2007 across country.
Gotcha.
But it really goes into a lot of interactions with, like, patients and scientists. And, you know, the big character transformation that I kind of talked about a little bit earlier in this conversation, but is my wanting to do this for myself. And then by the end, like, realizing that it's a part of something much bigger.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So that's kind of a neat... character transformation and all kinds of just crazy stories that happen in the ride and stuff. So,
gotcha.
I think it's a unique book that really focuses on rare disease, and I think there's not a huge market for like rare disease books yet.
Well, otherwise it wouldn't be rare.
Yeah, exactly. I guess so. Yeah. So check this out though. FA is a rare disease, and there's about 5,000 people in the U.S. that have it. But if you consider rare disease as one group, there's 7,000 different rare diseases.
Okay.
25 million people in the U.S. have a rare disease.
Wow, so, okay. Yeah, so...
So in that respect, it's actually not very rare at all, you know?
And I see what you're saying. So the category of rare disease, even if you take it as the bigger picture of the 25 million people, there's not a lot of... material
right.
out there.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Got it. So what's the definition of a rare disease?
The NIH defines, or maybe it's the FDA, I forget. Anyway, they define a rare disease as a disease with a population of less than 200,000 in the US.
Oh, so you're well below that.
Yeah. So FA and like but you know, in some respects, I feel very fortunate. We do have a pretty robust and active community. I mean, there's some people that have a rare disease with, like, 5 people in the world that have that disease, you know. And so, with that in mind, you know, a lot of our focus is to support the rare disease community because we're all in the same boat, you know.
Yeah, got it. What's something that people don't really know about you?
That people don't really know?
Yeah, well, look, like, you're in the public a lot, right? You talk a lot, you give a lot of speeches. Like, you're a pretty public figure in terms of, like, you're not in an engineering firm at a desk, like, just keeping to
yourself,
right? Like, you're out there. So, you know, if someone knew you relatively well... you know, I'm not saying like your mom, like what would be something that they don't know?
That's a tough one. All right, you first. Give me a couple more minutes to think. What's something that people don't know about you?
The tides have turned. Well, I was adopted, so that's one thing. So I get a lot of little old Asian ladies coming up to me and talking Korean to me, and I have no idea what they're saying. So, I went to high school in New York City, and there would be plenty of these little old Asian people walking up to me and speaking. I'm assuming it was Korean. I would assume that they would guess what I was, but I would be like, I can't help you out. I have no idea what they're saying.
I can't give you directions. So, I don't know where the bathroom is. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I guess another fun fact is that I don't speak Korean. So.
All right, there we go. Nice. Let's see. So, I don't know. I guess the cue of language. You know, I've been to France a couple times this year. I took 4 years of French in high school.
Yeah.
But, like,
did it come rushing back to you? When you
like, there was, like, four phrases that came back, yeah. And I was getting all stoked for, like, 2 days, and then got into it a little more. I was like, I don't know anything.
I heard that the new Google earbuds can translate in real time.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think they're wireless, like, completely wireless. But I saw an ad or something. I think someone actually posted like the fact that it will translate other languages.
Wow, that's cool.
In real time.
If there was only something that would translate your speech as it goes out, you know. Well, I guess you could.
Well, if they have, I mean, let's say everyone has these, right?
Oh, yeah.
Then
that would solve it, yeah.
Pretty, I mean, it's going to be crazy when you think about it, right? Like, to be able to communicate with anybody at any point fluently, that changes the game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and that technology is like on our doorstep.
So what you could do is, you know, you could wear those earbuds, right, and have a spare pair in your pocket, like at all times, and be, yeah, like, here, put, right, these on, and, right, we can talk. Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Well, I know people that will like have their phone out and do like Google Translate.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's a little bit slower because you got to, right, like, but yeah, it's going to be pretty crazy.
There we are. And then you'll be able to speak Korean then.
It's going to be a beautiful thing. what's on your bucket list?
My bucket list, you know, cure FA.
Sure.
That's the focus.
That's a big kahuna.
Yeah.
I like that.
So.
Cool, man. Any takeaways that you want people to come away with besides, you know, not taking yourself too seriously? And
well, so we're at a CrossFit gym, and, you know, CrossFit has really shown me a lot about myself. You know, you were there when I was first getting into CrossFit, and I'd, yeah, come to the gym, mm-hmm, and I'd look on the board and be like, there's no way I could do the squat. And then all of a sudden we'd like figure out a way to do it, right? Like me and you or whoever, other coaches.
We just made it work.
And every night I would leave the gym and be like, holy cow, I did something that I didn't think I was going to be able to do. And I think that's, you know, that's my takeaway from CrossFit and, you know, something that I really, really cherish. You go to CrossFit and you get to do magic. Like, you get to do something that you didn't think was possible, you know? So, that's...
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, we get so many people... I mean, because we're in an area where it's like, you know, everyday people with, you know, 9-to-5 jobs and families and yada, yada, yada. So, we're not... We don't have, like, you know, elite collegiate athletes here who,
right,
you know, already know how to do a bunch of these movements.
Like, yeah.
So many people come in with this fear of, I can't do that. Or,
yeah.
Or I'm going to be last. Or, you know, I'm going to, yeah, be the worst. Right? And I'm like, what does the worst mean? You know? Like,
yeah.
So, to hear that is, yeah.
Well, and that's the thing about CrossFit too. Like, at every single, I've gone to quite a few boxes like that. When I travel, sometimes I'll drop in. In every box I've ever been to, everyone's been really positive, and everyone's working to their own maximum. There is no, like, that's not even a thing in CrossFit, like, comparing yourself. Sure, yeah, there's numbers on the board, but when you get into it, it's like you're going against yourself, and everyone is counting on you to work to your own max. Right. And that's what pushes them to work to theirs, you know?
Well, and also to kind of circle back to what we were talking about in terms of, like, attitude and, like, you know, you get FA or you get some rare disease or whatever the case may be, something happens to you, and there's, you know, you make a decision. You either can feel sorry for yourself and mope and you know, take the negative route, or you can see it as a positive thing. And or make the best out of it, right? Make lemonade out of lemons, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, same thing with workouts. Like,
yeah,
two different people can do the same workout, and you know, finish around the same time or whatever the case may be. But one sees it as a positive experience, a growing experience, and another sees it as
you know,
a negative. So
it's just,
dude, we're getting like super philosophical here.
I know.
Yeah,
my mind just
this is
blue.
This is like your second book in podcast form. This is gonna be awesome. Mm-hmm. We're gonna have to co-write a book. Yeah, it's. I mean, again, not a quote that we came up with, but life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% how you react.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, life's about how you react. Yeah.
Yeah. Were you pawning that off as your own quote before too?
Dude, I think there's no quote that's never been said before.
It's true.
So I think an original quote is just an iteration of you know,
another
the next
quote. So. I couldn't tell if you were joking or not with the Maya Angelou thing. After a second, I was like, oh, he really doesn't know that this is like a...
I feel like I've searched for it before, and because I searched specific words,
okay,
and those weren't the exact words, right. You know, so yeah. Anyway.
Sure.
Yeah.
We'll take that. All right, bud. Thanks for your time, man.
Yeah, definitely. It was fun. Yeah. Thank you.
Hey folks, thanks again for listening to Cross the Conner Radio. If you like what you heard, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and leave us a review, which helps us get found on the interwebs. Also, head over to social media, find us on Facebook and Instagram at Cross the Conner, KANNA. And if you have any questions for the podcast, email us at info@crossthatkana.com. Thanks and have a great day.